Ordinary persons cannot understand how the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, but the devotee can actually see Him. Not only can the devotee see Him outwardly, but he can see with spiritual vision that everything is resting in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described in Bhagavad Gita, Matsthani Sarva Bhutani. That is the vision of a Mahabhagavata. He sees everything others see, but instead of seeing merely the trees, the mountains, the cities of the sky, he sees only His worshipable Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything, because everything is resting in Him only. This is the vision of the Mahabhagavata. In summary, a Mahabhagavata, a highly elevated pure devotee, sees the Lord everywhere as well as within the heart of everyone. This is possible for devotees who have developed elevated devotional service to the Lord. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Cholita Bhakti Vilojanena, only those who have smeared their eyes with the ointment of love of Godhead can see everywhere the Supreme Lord face to face. It is not possible by imagination or so-called meditation. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shakshaya And there was a very pitra, like very intense fight which Guru Maharaj does with the Yakshas. And that was only because they had actually troubled his brother. So to take revenge for his brother, Dhru Maharaj was fighting with the Yakshas. And he killed so many Yakshas. And in that chapter, there was a lesson on anger management. Because he was so angry that, you know, why this was done to my, this injustice was done to my brother. To take revenge, he killed so many Yakshas that Swayambhuva Manu himself had to come. And his grandfather, and he had to tell him that, look, and so much anger is not good for the devotee of the Lord. So please get pacified, control your anger and stop killing these Yakshas. So Dhru Maharaj actually listens to these instructions of his grandfather. And he stops the fight with the Yakshas. And because he stops the fight, then Kuvera, who is the protector of the Yakshas, or who Yakshas are the followers of Kuvera, who is the treasurer of wealth, he comes and gives him darshan. And he actually, first of all, thanks him. He says that I'm very happy that you have stopped killing my followers. You have stopped killing the Yakshas. And then he asks him that I'm very pleased with you, so ask me for any benediction. And Dhru Maharaj, now Kuvera is the treasurer of wealth of all the demigods. So you can imagine how much wealth Kuvera has at his disposal. So Dhru Maharaj could have asked for, you know, all the wealth or even a greater or more opulence in his kingdom or something like that. But being the pure devotee that he was, Dhru Maharaj said that, no, you just give me, bless me that I have pure devotional service. And my devotional service never shakes for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada writes in the purport to that section, Prabhupada says that from the a pure devotee of the Lord generally never asks anything from anyone. What to speak of demigods, a pure devotee does not even seek anything from anything ulterior, even from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Prabhupada says that if you are asking for pure devotional service unto the Lord, you can even ask it from a demigod. And that is the example Dhru Maharaj was setting. That okay, it's a demigod who is giving him darshan and who wants to give him some boon, so he asks for this, worship unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada said there is nothing wrong in asking such a boon from the demigods. So that section happens, and now Dhru Maharaj has come back to his kingdom. And this chapter, the 10 verses that have been discussed in yesterday, this chapter describes how Dhru Maharaj started executing his responsibilities as a saintly king. He was setting an example as a Rajarishi. So in the previous few verses, we saw that he was doing lots of sacrifices in his kingdom. And in Bhagavad Gita also, this is stressed, that unless sacrifices are done, the supreme authorities won't be pleased and we will not get enough rain, sunshine, all these necessities of life. So it is very important to please the superior authorities with sacrifices. So Dhru Maharaj, to set an example of an ideal king, he is doing sacrifices. And Prabhupada explains in the purports also, in yesterday's purport also it was discussed nicely, how there are many exploitative leaders today who are actually, like now, in order to do these sacrifices, these Rajarishis or these kings used to collect taxes from their citizens. And these taxes, they were then using for the benefit of the citizens only. And Prabhupada describes that how there are many exploitative leaders nowadays in the society who are heavily taxing their citizens. And we see how much tax, you know, the tax bracket has increased in Australia. It's so high, your tax bracket. So heavily tax the government is doing. But after that, are we being given enough facilities or enough direction and avenues so that the citizens can go back to the Supreme Lord or to the abode of the Supreme Lord? Most of the countries, there is so much of corruption. Politicians are just filling their pockets by, you know, exploiting citizens and taking heavy taxes. In some countries, there are facilities, but then are the facilities being provided to worship the Supreme Lord? And that is not there because the leaders themselves are misguided. There are no Brahminical layers guiding these leaders. But Dhru Maharaj was constantly being guided by the Brahminical layer, and he was performing these sacrifices to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And while performing the sacrifices, he did not lose vision of what is the ultimate goal of life. Now we see in this section, in the pastime of King Prachina Parishad, he was also performing sacrifices. But sometimes when we perform these sacrifices, we can get carried away. Like Prabhupada also talks about the ill effects of, or the dangers of doing Ashtanga Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga is also a process by which one can achieve the Supreme Lord. But someone can be distracted by the siddhis and the boons that one gets along the way while performing Ashtanga Yoga. And that is what we see in the case of King Prachina Parameshwar. He was performing all these sacrifices, and he was, in the name of performing these sacrifices, he had started killing so many animals. And then Narada Muni had to come and show him, open his eyes and show him that now all these animals are waiting to kill you in your next life. So stop these sacrifices and stop this animal killing in the name of sacrifices. But with Dhruva Maharaj, we see that he did perform sacrifices, but he never got deviated. He was very clear in his ultimate goal. He knew that the ultimate goal is to achieve the Supreme Lord. So along with all these sacrifices, all these fruitful activities, he was also performing pure devotional service unto the Lord. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that somebody might, you know, raise this question that being a pure devotee, why did he have to do sacrifices? Why not just do pure devotional service? So Prabhupada explains that a king has always, he always has to set an example. He has to be exemplary to his citizens. To set an example, Dhruva Maharaj did sacrifices, but he also continued his pure devotional service unto the Lord. And in the purport we read that how Dhruva Maharaj was fearless in his activities as a Kshatriya. He was absolutely dedicated to the Supreme Lord, and at the same time he was completely fearless in also guiding his citizens back to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that is the gist of today's verse, how Dhruva Maharaj is now focusing on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and slowly he will again start doing Tivra Bhakti so that he can go back to Godhead. And it is described in the later section that a celestial airplane comes to take Dhruva Maharaj back home, back to Godhead. And you know, over there Dhruva Maharaj just steps on the head of death personified and he enters into that airplane. So Prabhupada says that for devotees, actually Lord Krishna himself comes as death. So for a devotee there is no fear of death. It is just like the next chapter of their life beginning. So that is what we see in case of Dhruva Maharaj also. No fear of death. It was like in an instant he just stepped on the head of death and he stepped onto the airplane, the celestial airplane that had come to receive him. So this is the gist of this section. Now today is the disappearance day of two important personalities. And we will spend the remainder of the class discussing about the lives and the story of these two personalities, the pastimes of these two personalities. Prabhupada says in many sections of the Bhagavatam that whenever it is the appearance or disappearance day of a personality of a Vaishnava Acharya, it is very important to glorify that Vaishnava Acharya. And it is also very important to be in a prayerful mood towards that Vaishnava Acharya, because they are in a very merciful mood on their disappearance and appearance day. So we get lots of blessings and empowerment from those Vaishnava Acharyas. So today is the disappearance day of Bhakti Vinod Thakur as well as Dadadhar Pandit. And we will start by discussing the disappearance day of the pastimes of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, because he was an Acharya in our Gaudiya Sampradaya not long ago. And he was a very, very exemplary Acharya. Especially for the Grahasthas, he was a very exemplary Acharya on how to balance spiritual life with material life and how to still execute your Grahastha responsibilities and your normal karmic duties. So we will start by reciting this Pranati Mantra, requesting everyone to repeat after me. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Satchidananda Namine.
Satchidananda Namine.
Gaura Shakti Swarupaya.
Gaura Shakti Swarupaya.
Rupanuga Varayate.
Rupanuga Varayate.
Please repeat the translation. I offer my obeisances.
I offer my obeisances
unto Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur.
Unto Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur.
Who is the transcendental energy.
Who is the transcendental energy.
Of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
And the strict follower.
And the strict follower.
Of the six Goswamis.
Of the six Goswamis.
Head pastimes of the Lord or his incarnations. In fact, from most of the incarnations, we are not even aware when the Lord disappeared. So we celebrate the appearance days very nicely, but usually we don't celebrate the disappearance day of the Lord. So, like, we don't know the exact day when Lord Ram left this planet, for example. Or we don't know the exact day when Lord Krishna left this planet. Neither on our calendars it is mentioned, disappearance day of Lord Krishna, or disappearance day of Lord Ram, or Narasimha Dev, or something like that. So, when it comes to the Lord and His incarnations, we usually like to celebrate the appearance day, and that is only because we don't like to focus that the Lord left this world and He went away from our vision. So that is not a day we really like to dwell on. We like to dwell on how the Lord came in this material world, how He was so merciful, what are the pastimes and activities He did since His birth. That is what we like to focus on when it comes to the Lord and His devotees, when it comes to the Lord and His incarnations. However, when it comes to the Vaishnava Acharyas, both the appearance and the disappearance day are very important. And that is why if we see most of the prominent Vaishnava Acharyas' disappearance day, we always celebrate. They are mentioned on a calendar and we do have a celebration for that day. Like today in the afternoon, we'll have Pushpanjali and then there'll be a feast. So why do we like to dwell on the disappearance pastime also of these Vaishnava Acharyas? That is because that day is also important for us, and there are two reasons why we dwell on the disappearance pastimes also of these Vaishnava Acharyas. And that is because the first thing is when these Vaishnava Acharyas appear in this world, their glories are still unknown to the world. Some Vaishnava Acharyas might have done some pastimes in childhood and their glories might have spread all over the world. However, for most of the Acharyas, the glories have not yet spread. They have not started manifesting those pastimes for which they have been sent by Lord Krishna to this world. And that is why we are not so much aware of what they are going to do or how their life is going to unfold or how they are going to start enacting the specific purpose for which they have been sent to this world. So because we are unaware of that, we also focus on the disappearance day. Because by the time the disappearance day comes, then Vaishnava Acharya has already manifested all his pastimes. He has already started achieving the purpose for what he had come. And that is why we focus on the disappearance day. Because by that time, by the time the Vaishnava Acharya leaves this world, his glories are fully manifest. He has achieved the purpose for which he had come. And everybody, all his fame has been already spread all over the world. So that is one of the reasons why we focus on the disappearance day of Vaishnava Acharyas. The second reason is that we understand that when a Vaishnava Acharya leaves this world, he is actually going back home, back to Godhead. He had come, Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale. So, Preshthaya means by the will of the Lord, he has come to this world. He has now wound up his pastimes and now it is time for him to go back, to return back home, back to Godhead. So, that is another joyful occasion for us. We are celebrating the Vaishnava Acharya rejoining Lord Krishna and his associates in their eternal pastimes. So, same with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We know that on his disappearance day, he rejoined the Lord in his pastimes. And that is why it is a day of celebration. So, disappearance days are like a mixed emotion for devotees. Especially for the contemporaries of that Vaishnava Acharya, it is obviously a sad day. Because the Vaishnava Acharya is now going to disappear from the vision of this world. So his contemporaries, his disciples, his followers, for them it is actually very emotional and sad day. But at the same time it is joyful because these pure devotees are now going back to Godhead. They have achieved their purpose and now they are returning home. So with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll focus a little bit on his pastimes now. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the Siksha Guru of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was the Diksha Guru of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the Diksha Guru of our dear Srila Prabhupada. So that is how we are linked with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, when he was glorifying Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually the originator of pure Krishna consciousness movement in this world, during his manifest pastimes. So Krishna consciousness movement, we know that it's ages old. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra was there in the Vedas as well. Although it was in the reverse order, but it was there in the Vedas. So this Krishna consciousness movement, like some people feel, it's not a new movement. It has been there since ages. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and revived the movement. He came with the specific purpose of, spreading the glories of the holy name in this world, of giving love of Godhead to everyone. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur has been, Prabhupada is actually crediting him with being the originator of the pure Krishna conscious movement in today's day and age in Kali Yuga. And we'll understand the reasons why Srila Prabhupada is giving this credit to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, it was a golden age. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, Lord Nityananda was there, all their associates were there, like the Panchatattva, even Swarupa Damodar Prabhu, Ramananda Rai, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, all these associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were there. And it was a golden period for the Sankirtan movement of Lord Krishna. And after that layer disappeared, then there was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and some contemporaries of him who spread the glories by writing these volumes of books like Chaitanya Charitamrita and all. And once that layer disappeared, we had the six Goswamis still there on the planet who are very ardently carrying out the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of discovering all the pastime places of Lord Krishna, writing many books based on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, and also spreading the glories of the book distribution, converted lots of prominent kings into Vaishnavas. So they also carried on the mission very nicely of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But after that layer disappeared, there were very few acharyas who came in the Gaudiya lineage. We had Balde Vidya Bhushan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but they were very spaced apart and very few were there. So over a period of time, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared and all these prominent acharyas disappeared, in the period of time of around 300 years or 350 years, most of the pristine teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already passed Paulas, Prakrita Sahajiyas, many such Apasampradayas had erupted during that time. So these Apasampradayas were claiming that they are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. However, they were twisting the philosophy and they were carrying on many illicit activities and unscrupulous affairs in the name of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these things were going on and there was no one who was still, you know, strongly preaching the strong message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or the message of love of Godhead to Krishna. That message had completely been lost. So it was up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. When he appeared, it was up to him to then again revive this pure Krishna consciousness movement. It was up to him to actually defeat all these Apasampradayas, to put them in their place and to again bring back the teachings and the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and start spreading the glories of the holy name. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has revealed in his teachings what his original identity was in the spiritual world and for what purpose he has been sent to this material world. So he himself has revealed that he is none other than Kamala Manjari, that is his eternal position in the spiritual world. And he has revealed how he is connected with Radharani. So Manjaris are actually the servant maids of Radharani. They don't usually serve Krishna directly. They serve Krishna by serving Radharani. So all these Manjaris are usually 12 or 13 years old. And they are associated with one of the gopis or directly with Radharani. So in case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes that his original position is that of Kamala Manjari, who is the servant of Rupa Manjari. And Rupa Manjari is none other than Rupa Goswami in this world. And therefore, if we see in the Pranati Mantra also, it says, Rupa Nuga Varayate. Rupa Nuga means an ardent, a strict follower of Rupa Goswami. So in the spiritual world also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a servant of Rupa Manjari. And in turn, Rupa Manjari is a servant of Lalita Sakhi. So that is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur's spiritual position has been described. And it is said that he is a young girl in the spiritual world of 12 or 13 years. And his residing place is a kunja on the banks of the Yamuna. And the name of that kunja or that grove is actually Swananda Sukhada Kunja. And we see that because his eternal home is Swananda Sukhada Kunja, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was enacting his manifest pastimes in this world, in Godruma, he also named his house as Swananda Sukhada Kunja. I'm sure many of us must have visited his house when we go to Mayapur. So this is the eternal position of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, when he was born, he was known as Kedarnath Datta. And his parents' name were Jagan Mohini and Anand Chandra Datta. He was born to these illustrious parents who were also very great devotees of the Supreme Lord. And as a child, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was extremely brilliant, very, very intelligent child. At the age of 2 itself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written his first poem. And at the age of 6, Bhaktivinoda Thakur completely knew all the scriptures. Like, he knew all the characters of Mahabharata, he knew all the characters of Ramayana, he knew what past time had happened in what sequence. He was very well versed with all these things. And in his own autobiography, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes a little bit about his childhood pastimes. So it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually born with a silver spoon. He was born in an extremely wealthy family. And you know, we can get an estimate of his family's wealth by understanding that they had elephants in their garden who used to roam around. So, you know, to feed an elephant you require tons of food per day. So, you know, obviously you need wealth to feed an elephant. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in such a rich family that, you know, they had elephants roaming around in their courtyard. And since childhood, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had shown that spark of how he is very brilliant. So, it is described that in his autobiography that to maintain that gardens, and they had a security guard, a gurkha, like we say in India. And this security guard was a dacoit formerly. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was somehow very close to the security guard. So he used to go and listen to the security guard, and the security guard used to tell him lots of stories of his earlier days as a dacoit. How he had fights with other dacoits, how he used to defeat some of the dacoits. So, but not only these pastimes, but the security guard was a very good storyteller in terms of Mahabharata and Ramayana. And that is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur learned all these pastimes. He became so well versed in Mahabharata and Ramayana because he used to listen to the security guard very often. Also, it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he was very inquisitive in his childhood. So he used to, there was one tantric Baba who used to live close to his house. And there were lots of people who had blind faith in this tantric Baba. And he also used to go and sit whenever there was an assembly and this tantric Baba was doing some ritual or he was giving some discourse. Out of inquisitiveness, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also used to go and sit in this assembly of the tantric Baba. And he writes that there was always a shroud of mystery around this tantric Baba. We never knew what he was doing in his personal quarters, what sort of activities he was doing. So some of the elders, and you know how children also gossip with each other if there is some tantric Baba close by. So some of the children have gossiped that this tantric Baba worships a skull. In his private chambers he has a skull and he is every day worshipping the skull. And if you go and feed milk to this skull, that skull will smile at you. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, being an inquisitive child, he also one day sneaked into this tantric Baba's inner chambers. And he fed milk to the skull. So I'm assuming he must have poured milk into the mouth of the skull. And he writes also innocently in his biography. He said, I did all that, but the skull never smiled at me. So these are, you know, some of the lesser known pastimes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how he used to spend his childhood time. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very close to one of his uncles. And this uncle became a great lawyer during those times. And the uncle, although he was a devotee when he was young, in his younger days, but once he became a lawyer, you know, the well-educated Englishman, he started becoming an atheist. So he started, you know, talking to Bhaktivinoda Thakur also about how, you know, we don't know if there's a Lord or there is no form to the Lord. So he started trying to corrupt Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mind with all these philosophies, incorrect philosophies. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that even though my uncle, he had a big influence on me in my childhood and he was trying to tell all this philosophy to me, I never gave up chanting the names of Lord Ram. So from that we can see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, since his childhood, was actually chanting the glories. He was always chanting the holy names. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually became a very proficient scholar, especially of the English language. His English was really nice. And he loved to write. So during his young days, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote volumes and volumes of books. And apparently, to our vision, they would appear like mundane books. Because he wrote, I believe, a 30-volume book on the pastimes of King Porus. King Porus was a great king who fought King Alexander, you know, in the earlier days in India. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a 30-volume manuscript on just the pastimes of King Porus. And then he also wrote a book, an 8-volume manuscript on the pastimes of Vikram and Vetal. Now we know in our childhood, especially in my childhood, I have grown up watching Vikram Vetal. It was a popular serial in India. I don't know in the Western world if you know about Vikram Vetal, but it's about the king and the spirit which is on top of that king all the time. And that spirit keeps asking questions to the king, and the king has to answer those questions very wisely. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book on an 8-volume manuscript on Vikram and Vetal's pastimes also. So sometimes when we read these things, that you know how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was writing all these mundane literature, we might try to, we might misunderstand the earlier ways of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But it is described in, by the Acharyas later on, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was just setting an example and trying to be acceptable in the eyes of the mundane people. And that is why he was enacting this, you know, short time he had enacted these pastimes, where he was writing all these mundane literature, but it was more so that people accepted. Because if somebody starts preaching the glories of the holy name straight away, people might not understand. Like for example, when Devabrat Maharaj comes, we always interview saying that he's from Yale University, how, you know, he's such a scholar, and he has studied at one of the best universities in the world. So that really brings up in the eyes of ordinary people. People think that yes, this is not someone who failed in life and that is why he has taken to the Krishna consciousness movement. This is a person who has achieved great heights, but still he has given up all that and then taken up the Krishna consciousness movement. So same with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was trying to be more, have more acceptance in the eyes of ordinary people. And therefore he showed his proficiency in the English language by writing all this literature. And at the age of 7 or 8, he had already started studying astrology as well. So this is, you know, showing how scholarly Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. And some of the, there are many acharyas who have written biographies of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They credit him with many achievements. And some of the achievements of Bhaktivinoda Thakur were, one of the achievements was that he was an exceptionally bold, powerful and scholarly preacher. So he strongly preached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And boldly and philosophically he pointed out all the mistakes in all the upper sampradayas that had come up. Like we said, the olas, bolas, prakrita sahajiyas, who were actually twisting philosophy and doing unscrupulous activities in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur not only preached the correct teachings or the correct philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was never scared to actually point out the mistakes in some of these upper sampradayas. And therefore there were a lot of people who were displeased with him. They were actually quite angry with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was completely fearless in his preaching. So that is what biographers, many people who have written his biographies, give him that credit. The second credit which is given to him was about his regular married life and about his normal army duties. So it is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a district magistrate. And as a district magistrate, he was extremely efficient. So what someone who might take 2 or 3 days to do, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would finish that work in 6 or 7 hours. So his daily schedule, you know, many times when we hear classes about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we hear how he used to lead his daily schedule. So his daily schedule, he was extremely disciplined. Not even one moment he would waste. And his sleep was hardly for a couple of hours during the day. So as the district magistrate also, he would go to his office. He would work for the in the morning for 5 hours or something and finish all the cases of the day in those 5 hours. And then he would come home, have lunch and again go back and finish whatever little pending work would be there. So that is how efficient he was. And as the district magistrate, he considered it his duty to boldly set the correct teachings of Vedas as well, or to not, you know, to wipe away adharma. So during his tenure as the district magistrate, there was actually a very unscrupulous tantric who had come, whose name was Vishaksena. Now we have seen his pastimes also in, you know, Bhakti Chandra Maharaj's CD about Srila Prabhupada. And we read about this pastime a lot. So this Visakshena was a tantric, and he had actually kept the whole village under his control. And he had some mystic siddhis. We are not saying that he was just a false person. He had lots of mystic siddhis because of the yoga that he must have done. But he was misusing his mystic siddhis in, you know, misguiding the innocent people of that village. So the people got alerted when he actually declared, Vishakshena declared that he is the incarnation of Mahavishnu. And now he is going to do, following in the footsteps of Krishna, he is going to do Ras Leela. So all the young girls of the village have to gather. And that is when people started protesting. Because they wanted to protect the chastity of their daughters and their daughters-in-law. So they actually went and complained to the British police. The Britishers were ruling at that time. And the Britishers had lot of faith in Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So they immediately assigned the case to Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur did lot of research first into this person. And he found out that he does have some siddhis, but he is wrongly claiming that he is an incarnation of Mahavishnu. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur went and confronted this Visakshena. And he had he had a very big debate. So Visakshena actually tried to somehow woo Bhakti Vinod Thakur with sweet words and promises that he'll also give him some benefits of his siddhis and all. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur, as the district magistrate, wanted to set the correct example. He wanted to wipe away all these unscrupulous people who were exploiting innocent people of the villages. So he got him arrested, he got Visakshena arrested. And during the court proceedings also, when the case was going on, Visakshena warned him that if you put me to trial or if you actually convict me, there is going to be so much destruction that will happen in your family. He gave him those warnings, but Bhakti Vinod Thakur, being the fearless preacher, did not care about that. And actually Visakshena's warnings came true. Bhakti Vinod Thakur's family members fell severely sick. Even Bhakti Vinod Thakur himself actually got blood dysentery and he really fell sick. But still Bhakti Vinod Thakur did not give up and he actually convicted him and ordered him to be put into jail. And even from jail, Visakshena was trying many things to destroy Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So then Bhakti Vinod Thakur found out that all these tantrics usually keep their siddhis in their hair. And even Visakshena had lot of hair. So then he ordered the jailers where he was arrested that go and cut off all his hair, just shave his head off. And once that was done, Visakshena lost all his powers. And in a few days he left the world. He died in a prison. So this is just showing an example of how as a district magistrate, Bhakti Vinod Thakur took upon himself to set the correct example in society and to see to it that people are not getting exploited by all these wrong teachings and wrong people who come into the society. So that was the second achievement. Now during his time, the caste Brahmins had gained lot of strength or power and they were trying to rule over the Vaishnavas and they were trying to say that the caste Brahmins are the best and no one can be better than these caste Brahmins. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur again, he studied the scriptures very nicely and he did lots of discourses and presentations on how, you know, what is the difference between a Brahmana and a Vaishnava and how a Vaishnava is actually superior to a Brahmana because he is worshipping the Supreme Lord and what are the actual duties of a Brahmana and how the caste Brahmins are not doing those duties but just claiming to be Brahmins based on their birth. So very nicely he used to mitigate all these wrong conceptions that were there in the society. And we also know the famous pastime when his son Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also took upon himself to go and preach about how Vaishnavas are superior to Brahmins. And after that, the third thing which Bhakti Vinod Thakur is credited with is writing many books. So do we all know what books Bhakti Vinod Thakur has written? Anybody? Names of any books? I'm sure we all know.
Harinam
Chintamani. Madhurya Kadambini, I don't think was Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Any other books which we are aware of Bhakti Vinod Thakur? Sorry?
Navadvip Mahatmya.
Yes, Navadvip Mahatmya, very nice. Yes, So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has also written a book called Sharanagati, where he has written many beautiful songs. So, most of the songs that we sing, Vaishnava songs that we sing in ISKCON today, most of them have been written either by Narottam Das Thakur or by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, one of the famous books, apart from Harinam Chintamani, Navadvip Mahatmya, there is also a book called Jaiva Dharma, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, which is a famous manuscript on pure devotional service. He also wrote Chaitanya Shikshamrita. That was also a book he wrote. He also wrote a book which was called as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the teaching, his teachings and precepts. And it is mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur started sending his books out of India as well to the Western world.
Did Bhaktivinoda Thakur write
Tattva Sandarbha? So he started sending his books out to the Western world also. And Srila Prabhupada notes in one of his books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent the book called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Teachings and Precepts in 1896 to the Macmillan Library in Canada and to London. And that was the year when Srila Prabhupada appeared in this world. So Prabhupada said that, you know, when I appeared, Bhaktivinoda Thakur just in that year had started sending all books to the Western world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings were being spread by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to the Western world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, during his time, made some predictions which have come to be true. So there are two or three predictions that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made. The first prediction was that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that a day will come when an empowered person will be born and he will spread the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. So this was a prediction that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made. And then obviously it was our Srila Prabhupada, dear Srila Prabhupada who appeared and who came, you know, fulfilled that prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that a person will come who will spread the glories of the Hare Krishna Mantra and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings all over the world. The second prediction which he had made was that time will come when people of Russia, England, France, Canada and all these countries will actually pick up karthals and mridanga and they will be chanting and dancing in the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was the second prediction. We see that happening, you know, even here in Australia. We have so many devotees of so many nationalities going out on Harinam. And, you know, all over the world we see devotees of different nationalities have picked up, you know, mridanga and karthals and they are actually chanting and dancing in Harinam. The third prediction he had made was that a day will come when fair-skinned people from Europe will actually come to Mayapur and they will chant Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan along with the Bengali Vaishnavas. He has actually written like that. And we see that is true. There are so many people of Western origin, fair-skinned people, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who are now actually residents of Mayapur now and who are, you know, coexisting along with the Bengali Vaishnavas and everyone is together chanting the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these are some of the contributions of, or some of the predictions which Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made. Now another significant contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was that he was instrumental in discovering the correct birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So once he was posted in Krishnanagar, and we know Krishnanagar comes when we are travelling from Calcutta to Mayapur, Krishnanagar comes on the way. So he was posted at Krishnanagar as a district magistrate. And he would travel very often to Navadvip to have Daiv Darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. But that was not the correct birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And once, after a long day's work, he was actually sitting on his terrace, the terrace of his building. And he saw on the other side of Ganga that there was a building which was illuminated and there was a light coming from a certain place. And he had never noticed that building before. And his son was also there with him and he also observed that light. So then the next day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to make some inquiries on that side of the Ganga. And the people who were living over there, they then told him that this is actually the birthplace of the correct birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But because the Ganga changed course, people are thinking that the birthplace is on the other side of Ganga, but actually this is the correct birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself actually did some research. He read lots of books. He also studied all the old maps. And he actually discovered discovered that's right, that is the actual place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and not the one which people are thinking it is. So after doing his own research, he also wanted to have the sanction or have the somebody else actually claim that yes, this is the correct birthplace. So he invited Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And at that time, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was already 120 years old. He could not even walk, so he used to be carried in a basket by his servant. So he was brought, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur showed him this place. And as soon as Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's basket was put on the floor, he started jumping up and down in ecstasy. And he started crying, Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan. This is the birthplace of my Gaura. This is the birthplace of my Gaura. That is how Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj also said that, yes, this is the correct birthplace of. So today's yoga peak, present day yoga peak, was actually discovered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that is one of his other achievements. So these are some of the pastimes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now he was a Grahastha Acharya. He had married twice, but it is again written when he writes about his childhood pastime that he was married off by his mother when he was 12 years old and his wife was 5 years old at that time. And because he was so young, he had a nanny who had accompanied him when he was getting married. So that is how he reminisces about his childhood. But that first wife died, so then he married second time, and the second wife was known as Bhagavati, who was actually the mother of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe, had 12 or 13 children, and he was training all of them to become pure devotees of the Lord. So he used to do his duties as a district magistrate very efficiently. He used to write so many volumes and volumes of books to spread the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He used to go door to door for preaching as well. Plus, he used to bring up his children very nicely. And that is why he is considered as an exemplary Grahastha Acharya. So this was about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We will quickly, for the next few minutes, discuss about Gadadhar Pandit, whose disappearance day is also today. So Gadadhar Pandit is actually none other than Radharani. He is part of the Panchatattva, and he is usually on the left-hand side of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna came down in the mood of Radharani to enact his pastimes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radharani also expressed a desire that I also want to participate in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he has already taken on my mood only. Krishna has already taken on my mood and gone. So, what should I appear as? Plus, Radharani said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to do pastimes as a sannyasi. So what role can I play now in his pastimes? Radharani also saw that there are all males in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So Lalita Sakhi had appeared as Ramanand Rai and Vishakha Sakhi had appeared as Swarup Damodar. So then Radharani decided that I am also not going to miss out on being part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So Radharani appeared as Gadadhar Pandit during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. So Gadadhar Pandit was only 1 year younger to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were very close childhood friends. So although Gadadhar Pandit was born in Chattagram, which is present day Chittagong, but his parents moved to Navadvip, very close to where Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra used to live in the childhood of Gadadhar Pandit itself. And it is mentioned that Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were inseparable as friends. Gadadhar Pandit was the shadow of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He used to keep following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wherever he used to go. However, their personalities were extremely different. So Gadadhar Pandit was very serene, calm, peaceful. He never used to argue much with anybody. He would not even talk much with anybody. Very peaceful child. Whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to keep getting into debates. We know as the childhood pastimes of Nimai, he used to keep debating with everybody and he used to keep mocking the Vaishnavas. He would catch hold of a Vaishnava, he would have a debate with him, then he would try to defeat the Vaishnava would not want anything to do with him and run away from there. So Gadadhar Pandit was not very approving of this fact of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's childhood pastimes, and he would actually try to stay away. And Gadadhar Pandit, he used to explain also to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to, do all these things. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would always tease him. And once, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him that what is the sign of a person who is self-realized? And Gadadhar Pandit said that one who has surrendered to the Supreme Lord. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that no, one who is, you know, has taken sannyas and who is in extreme suffering, that is the sign of a very elevated and self-realized person. And you will see that one day, he said. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, once he had returned from Gaya, we know how he started manifesting his pastimes as a devotee after he had come back from Gaya and after he had received initiation from his guru, Ishwara Guru. So that time all the devotees had gathered and they were saying that, oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come and there's a big change in him. He is now so humble, he is always crying out in separation of Krishna, he is always paying obeisances and asking forgiveness from all the Vaishnavas. So he has asked everyone to gather in Shuklamba Brahmachari's house. And Gadadhar Pandit was not invited. Somehow he was not aware. But he said that still I am going to go. And I will hide inside the house, but I still want to see what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has to say. So when all the Vaishnavas gathered, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started crying, tears of ecstasy. He was always crying out, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And he was seeking forgiveness from all these Vaishnavas. He said that I was not very nice to you all during my youth days, but now I realize that devotion to the Supreme Lord is the ultimate goal of this life. So he was really crying in separation of Krishna and also crying in remorse. And then he heard loud crying coming from somewhere. So he asked the devotees that who is this crying? And they all said that it's your Gadadhar Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is crying from in the inside room. And they called him. And Gadadhar Pandit was crying profusely because he was so happy to see this change in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, you know, he had gone into that mood once again of separation of Krishna. So he was crying and he was rolling on the ground and he was asking Gadadhar. Gadadhar was next to him. And he was asking him, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And Gadadhar Pandit, just to pacify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told him that, my dear Lord, Krishna is in your heart. Why are you looking around everywhere? He's there in your heart. But he did not expect that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will do like this there next. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started clawing at his heart with his nails. And he almost wanted to rip his heart open so that he can see Krishna over there. So immediately, and there was blood also starting to pour out. So immediately Gadadhar Pandit held Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands tightly. And he told him that, no, my Lord, please don't do like that. Just get pacified. You will see Krishna. You will see Krishna. So Sachi Mata saw this interaction between Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And she was so happy to see that Gadadhar Pandit is so protective of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is the only person who is able to pacify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going into one of his moods of separation. So she then went and requested Gadadhar Pandit. She said that you please never leave the side of my son. Because you are the one who are able to keep him peaceful and satisfied. And you are able to pacify him as well. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and he went to Jagannath Puri, he made Jagannath Puri as his residence, Gadadhar Pandit also went over there. And Gadadhar Pandit took up the service of serving Tota Gopinath. So there were three specific instructions which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Gadadhar Pandit. Three duties that Gadadhar Pandit had to execute. One was that he should continue being the Srimad Bhagavatam Acharya. So it is mentioned that Gadadhar Pandit was so proficient in reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam and he was so melodious that people would just throng to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. Very melodiously he would sing the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to take lot of pleasure in listening to the pastimes of Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit's mouth. So when Gadadhar Pandit, you know exactly this Guru Maharaj's pastime, when Gadadhar Pandit would recite Guru Maharaj's pastime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would again ask him to stop. Then he would recite all the chapters and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would again ask him to stop. So almost 100 times he would recite one pastime. So Dhruv Maharaj's pastime he heard almost 100 times from Gadadhar Pandit. And then, you know, slowly they would move on and then when they came to Prahlad Maharaj's pastime, again Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made Gadadhar Pandit recite almost 100 times Prahlad Maharaj's pastime. So it was so nectarian and sweet to hear Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him as one of the instructions that he will continue being the Acharya of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you know when Gadadhar Pandit would sing and recite the Bhagavatam, there were tears profusely flowing from his eyes also in ecstasy, and the whole manuscript would get wiped out, because the tears would fall on the ink and everything would get wiped out. He had to then again write the Bhagavatam. So this is how the Bhagavatam was being recited by him. The second instruction which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Gadadhar Pandit was that you will continue worshipping Tota Gopina deity till you leave this world. And Gadadhar Pandit carried on this instruction very well. Till he left the world, till that day he was worshipping Tota Gopina deity very nicely, which is there in present day Jagannath Puri. And the third instruction which he gave to Gadadhar Pandit was that you will give diksha on my behalf. So you will accept disciples and you will continue spreading the glories of the holy name. So Gadadhar Pandit accepted Tridanta Sannyas, and then he started initiating disciples as well. And Gadadhar Pandit also took what is called as Kshetra Sannyas. So Kshetra Sannyas means you will never leave that holy place. That is called like Kshetra Sannyas. And many people do that. Many widows take Kshetra Sannyas. If you see in Vrindavan or in Mayapur, they decide that they will never leave Vrindavan or Mayapur. They are just going to stay there forever. And till they leave this world. So similar sannyas Gadadhar Pandit had also taken. But once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving for Vrindavan, and Gadadhar Pandit could never bear separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that let me accompany you when you are going to Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Gadadhar Pandit, he reminded him that no, you have taken Kshetra Sannyas. You cannot leave this place and come with me. So Gadadhar Pandit actually gave very beautiful logic to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, wherever you are, it is Jagannath Puri. So that means I have not broken my vow of Kshetra Sannyas, because you are the Kshetra. So wherever you go, I am still, you know, following my vow of Kshetra Sannyas. And you are my Gopinath. So I am not even giving up the worship of Tota Gopinath if I come with you. So good arguments, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not get convinced. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that no, you have to set a good example for others to follow. So you please stay back in Jagannath Puri and I have to go to Vrindavan. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and when he left, Gadadhar Pandit just became unconscious. He fainted in separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the devotees had to carry him back to his house. And it is described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Ramanreti. He started traveling towards Vrindavan. But somehow he could not go to Vrindavan. He had to cancel his Vrindavan trip and he had to come back to Jagannath Puri. And when he came back to Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told all the Vaishnavas, he said that Krishna did not allow me to go to Vrindavan because I had offended his devotee Gadadhar Pandit. And that is why Krishna was displeased with me and my whole Vrindavan trip got cancelled and I am back over here in Jagannath Puri. So this is how Gadadhar Pandit had such a strong influence on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Gadadhar Pandit, a little bit about his initiation pastime. Now, whenever any great elevated Vaishnava would come to Navadvip, Gadadhar Pandit and Mukunda were very close. So Mukunda would always take young Gadadhar to meet these Vaishnavas and take their blessings. And on one such occasion, the most elevated Pundarik Vidyanidhi came to Navadvip. And Gadadhar Pandit was told by Mukunda that let's go and take darshan. He's a very elevated Vaishnava, very pure devotee of the Lord. So come, we'll go and take blessings from him. And when Gadadhar Pandit came with Mukunda in the presence of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was not prepared for what he would see. Because he saw that Pundarik Vidyanidhi was in such opulent surroundings. He was sitting on a bed which was as white as foam and as soft as cotton, like very soft bed he was sitting on. And he had a hookah which he was smoking, opulent clothes he was wearing, and there were some servants who were fanning him, somebody was applying chandan and somebody was offering in tambula. So very opulent surroundings he saw. And Gadadhar Pandit, he was a very simple and austere brahmachari at that time. And when he saw all these things, there were some doubts which arose in his mind about Pundarik Vidyanidhi being a devotee, that he was a pure devotee of the Lord. And Mukunda could sense that Gadadhar Pandit is having these doubts about Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So just to dissipate these doubts of Gadadhar Pandit, Mukunda started reciting some verses from the Bhagavatam. And as soon as he recited those verses, Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a completely changed man. He started, you know, rolling around in ecstasy. He came out of that bed. He started rolling around in ecstasy. As soon as he heard Krishna's name, he started tearing at his clothes. The hookah went flying somewhere. So Gadadhar Pandit saw this change in Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And he actually realized, that realization dawned on him that yes, this is a pure devotee of the Lord. And I was unnecessarily doubting such a pure devotee of the Lord. And because with that realization also came guilt. Because he was a pure devotee, he himself felt that this is an aparadha that I have done by actually misunderstanding another devotee of the Lord. So just to, to repent or to make up for whatever he had felt in his mind about Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he decided to take initiation from him. And he went and approached Mukunda, and he also asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's permission that I have decided to take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately gave his blessings. He said, yes, he's a very elevated Vaishnava, go and take initiation from him. And then Gadadhar Pandit took actually initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So this was a little bit about Gadadhar Pandit. So he is the Shakti, obviously, he is the Ladini Shakti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur is Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. He is also the empowered Shakti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is no coincidence that both these personalities disappear on the same day, being the Shakti of Krishna and the Shakti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let us take this opportunity to, you know, be in a prayerful mood and offer intense prayers to Bhakti Vinod Thakur especially, because he is the Acharya, the very recent Acharya in our Sampradaya, that he also blesses us with intense devotional service, like he himself was performing for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we get that empowerment, and we also preach the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings all over the world. So we end the class here. Sorry, we went a bit overboard, but I know there is no breakfast today. So, Granthaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Did anyone have any quick questions, comments, or corrections?